You are listening to Sheep Might Fly, a podcast of serialized fiction written and read by Tansy Rayner Roberts. Today I'll be reading Dance Princess Dance Part 12. I'm so sorry I had to skip a week. It was the craziest of weeks. We had the school holidays ending, my eldest daughter started high school, I'm still recovering from that, and I launched a new business. Also, I hadn't finished this chapter yet. That's how close to the wire I am with this story. Things are calmer now, and I'm going to make it up to you with an extra long episode. In the meantime, I received some super cute cover art, which I commissioned for the ebook of this story, which is going to be going out to my Patreon supporters in March 2017 and will be available for general sale around April. That's the plan, anyway. I have another apology to make also, which is that thanks to writing this story so much on the fly, I missed a fairly important editorial note from the previous chapter where I managed to confuse the characters of Clover and Bluebell. I thought about re-recording it and I had a crazy week and I decided that it was important to leave it up with all its authentic mistakes in. That's my story anyway and I'm sticking to it. The correction has been made from now on, and it will be corrected, obviously, when edited for the ebook. So if you're getting confused about the characters, Bluebell actually does not appear in the story. So the character who appeared to be Bluebell in that chapter was actually Clover, and Bluebell is only ever referred to. I'm sorry for the confusion, but there you go, writing without a net. So, Dance Princess Dance, Part 12. Drink Me. Miss Clover, the fairy godmother, stood at the bar, pouring together a sweet and decadent concoction from ice and violets and moonlight. "So you want my magic after all?" she teased. "No," said Ziyi, working to make her voice as commanding as possible. Sarge was unconscious on his bar stool. The other humans were caught up in the dance. All she had was herself and her boys, Kai and Dennis, standing on either side of her small shoulders, lending her their strength. "I don't want your magic, Clover. I want to free the princes from your spell." Clover tilted her head to one side. Her dark curls seemed to grow darker and curlier all around her shoulders. Her eyes glowed, and her hands moved faster, faster as she mixed the drink with leaves and lemon, grasses and spring water, a spiral straw, a paper umbrella. "Oh, darling," she said, "it's the same thing. The only way you're getting out of here is by wishing for it really hard." "You can't," Dennis blurted out. "Ziggy, that's what she wants. If you use her wishes, you'll end up like her, stuck here." "It has trap written all over it," Kai agreed. Ziyi did not take her eyes off Miss Clover. "How many wishes do I get? How many is too many?" Clover laughed, a broken and tragic sound. "That's the big question, isn't it? In stories, it's always 1, 2, 3. But wishes don't weigh the same as each other. The bigger the wish, the faster you fall." "So," said Kai, "small wishes. If Zig sticks to small wishes, will she be safe?" "You can't be serious," said Dennis. "It's not worth the risk." "Of course it's worth the risk," Ziyi hissed back at him. "The princes are our job, Dennis. Who else is going to save them?" Kai stepped forward, interested in the challenge. "What counts as a small wish? What makes wishes small?" "Oh, you're just full of questions," said Clover, looking him over for the first time as if she was interested in someone other than Ziyi. "I'm a reporter. It comes with the territory." She sniffed and turned away from him. "You smell of ink. Awful stuff. It gets under the fingernails and into the bloodstream. A filthy, clumsy sort of magic." "So, tell us about your magic," said Kai, sounding charming for once instead of awkward and shy. Was this what he was like when he was doing his job properly? "What makes a wish small or big?" The more specific it is, the tighter you wrap it in words, the smaller the magic, admitted Clover. World peace is enormous. That's a wish that would swallow you whole. First time out, you'd never come back from that one. Saving the lives of entire platoon without specifying how or why, she added with a touch of bitterness. Too big. Too many ways for the magic to think for itself. So, wishing everyone free all at once, not that I'm wishing that, Z clarified. Clover raised her eyebrows. That's big. Not world peace big, but I wouldn't risk it if I were you. You're being awfully helpful, Dennis growled on Z's other side. That's what a fairy godmother does, Clover said. We help. All right, said Kai, sounding flustered, which might or might not have had something to do with whose hand he was holding. We need to make a list of possible wishes, grade them on size, make a chart of some sort. I wish Corporal Jack free of the dance enchantment, Z said without hesitation, her gaze locked with Miss Clover. Clover smiled widely. You can have that one for free, she said, after a round of drinks. What? Said Jack, her dark hair still scattered with rose petals and fern fronds, and her pupils blown wide from the music or the magic. The hell is going on? This is the part where we save everyone, said Z, clinging to Jack's shoulder. Jack had so many muscles. She was the greatest. Jack leaned down. Are you drunk, Ziggy? It's part of the plan, Z said indignantly. Shh! Don't tell anyone the plan. She took Jack's hand and led her to the bar, where Kai and Dennis were most of the way through the drinks that Clover had been pouring for them, a midsummer peas blossom and a Titania's ass, respectively. Z herself had consumed an entire glass goblet full of a swirling liquid that was either green or purple and somehow both at once. Clover called it a bilious fae, insisting it was the exact colour of a fairy that was about to throw up. It didn't taste sickening. It was soft and meadow-sweet, and it made Z feel like rainbows from the tips of her fingers all the way up to her hairline. "What are you doing?" Jack asked. "You can't eat and drink anything in Fairyland, or you get stuck here. What are you, new?" Z wanted to straighten out the little crinkle between Jack's eyes, but had exactly enough sobriety left in her to keep her hands to herself. Miss Clover says that's an old wives' tale. "That's sexist," Dennis objected from where he was sprawled comfortably over the bar. "Old person's tale." "Old toadstool tail," said Kai, who was sprawled comfortably over Dennis. The two of them snickered together. Jack threw up her hands. "Miss Clover is lying to you, obviously." Their bartender smiled sweetly. "I can't lie. Fairies aren't allowed to. Well-known fact. We can be as tricksy as we like, but if we tell an outright untruth, our magic unravels and we go all human. It's a horrible mess." "That could also be a lie," Jack said, between gritted teeth. Z patted her arm. It was that or squeeze her bicep admiringly, and that might distract them from the main business. "If it is, too late. We drank the things." "We drank the things," Kai and Dennis proclaimed in unison and drained their cups dry. "We need you to help save the princes," said Z. "That's why I woke you up from the spell. You know them best. Can't use too many wishes. So we have to talk them into saving themselves." Jack gave them all her most furious murder face. Those princes couldn't save their way out of a wet paper bag. Prince Chase was 14 years old when he first thought about ending it all. It was only for a minute or two, up on the tallest turret of Castle Charming, staring down at the snowy courtyard below. Would it be better to do it in summer, without the snow to cushion him as he fell? He snapped himself out of it by digging his fingernails into his palms until he drew blood. When he was steady again, when he felt like he could be trusted with moving, he saw his brother, a tiny speck, running laps of the shovelled clear rookery pitch. For the first time, he wondered whether Cyrus was trying to kill himself too. "This is stupid," he huffed a few minutes later, trying to keep up with his brother's jogging gait. "Why are you working so hard at this? What's the point?" "First rookery match this Saturday," said Cyrus, red-faced, but not even out of breath. "Father will be watching." Maybe it was the soreness in his palms, or the dizziness from what he'd thought about up on the turrets, but Chase lost it. "No, he won't," he yelled. "He won't come. He won't watch. And even if he does, there is nothing you can do to impress him. Doesn't make a blind bit of difference. We could set ourselves on fire in the forecourt, and he'd just stare into the distance and mutter, 'Boys will be boys.' He doesn't care about us. Doesn't care about anything," he added in a smaller voice. They both knew where their father's heart was. It was locked inside a glass coffin in a tower with their mother. It was out in the world, yearning after the child that had been lost. Chase and Cyrus, and even their little sister Cammy, could never get close to it. Cyrus stopped running. He leaned over, stretching by habit. "Maybe I'm doing this for me," he said. "I like being strong. I like having challenges to meet. I'm fine." Chase stared at his brother and thought the words, "I'm not fine." "Serena's invited us to a party," he blurted, "over at Fortinbras. Do you reckon we can sneak 3 horses out without anyone noticing?" Cyrus took a deep swallow of chill winter air and stood up straight. Already his incessant training was having an effect on his shoulders, his legs. He and Chase weren't identical anymore. Perhaps that was the point. "Fine," Cyrus said. "We'll go to a party. Nothing crazy. We have a game coming up." "Nothing crazy," Chase promised. He was 14 years old, and he needed to think about something, anything other than how long it would take to fall from the highest turret to the courtyard below. A party was a start. Now, it was now. He was nearly 20, only a few months from the big birthday that would change everything. Chase was dancing harder than he had ever danced before. His feet were slick with blood. The dancing shoes had long since fallen off him. Foxglove was in his arms, grinding and enticing. The music was loud and frantic in his head. His mouth tasted like rose petals and acorns. "I'm never going home," he thought. And he didn't even mind all that much. It was winter back there. Home was a cold castle, frosted balconies, ice underfoot, slippery wet grass on the rookery pitch. Home was people staring all the time. Long silences over dinner, the endless debutantes being thrown at him. Like picking a bride would solve any of his problems, like having a girlfriend would make him steadier, easier to manage. Home was headlines in the charming Herald. Princes gone wild. Like it mattered, any of it. Cyrus is the one who had to be king someday. Chase was the spare, entirely unnecessary. He could fade away and no one would even notice. He wasn't dancing with Foxglove anymore. It was Corporal Jack in his arms, his Jack's, all broad shoulders and unimpressed face. She was talking. It was probably a lecture. He didn't need to listen. "Stay and dance," he murmured, hands sliding over her hips, bringing her closer. "Dance with me, Jack's." She growled at him, but came into his arms more readily than he had expected, her face mashing into his cheek. Too late, he realised she was doing this so she could talk directly into his ear. "The only way out is for you to want to leave. You have to say the words. Ziggy wasted one of her wishes to give you that exit, but she can't make you take it. Not without the wish getting too big. You have to want to leave, Chase. You have to say it out loud. Got it?" Chase liked her here, pressing against him. This made more sense than anything else. She made him feel warm. She always had. "Marry me," he breathed into the side of her neck. Jack made a distressed noise. Are you kidding me right now? We're so good together. You're the only one who calls me on my bullshit. We'd be great together. She pulled back, her face all squinched up in shock and unhappiness. Chase, was all she said. Don't say no right away, he urged. The thought actually excited him. You'd make a kick-ass princess. I'm not a royal. Also, I'm a lesbian. Which you know! That gave him pause for only a minute or two. We don't have to have sex. Oh, thanks for clearing that up, she said. Chase, if you weren't drugged out of your skull on fairy music right now, I would punch you so hard. He moaned and leaned into her, his head resting on her shoulder. I don't want to go home. Jack pinched him in the side. That is the exact opposite of what I need you to be saying right now. You are such a disaster of a person. If you marry me, I'll do everything you say, he mumbled. Chase, she said, and there was worry in her voice now. Stay awake. Don't want to, he sighed. Never go home. Never go. Thanks for listening to Sheep Might Fly. If you like my work, check out Uncanny Magazine. They've just published my latest short story, Some Cupids Kill with Arrows, which is about speed dating with Greek gods. Don't date Hercules, really. Just don't do it. See you next time.